Hey guys, welcome to Telling the Told and Untold. My name is Tiro. Today we're going to be covering the infamous Tiro Fatupule case, but before we go straight into it, I do have to give you guys a couple of content warnings. In this video, we do talk about suicide, pregnancy, and termination. If that's not something you think you're interested in watching, then this video probably isn't for you. So maybe you can watch some of my other videos or just wait for my next upload. Tiro Fatupule, also known as Tiro, was born on the 10th of May 1992 in Midoland, Soweto. When she was young, her father passed away, and a couple of years later, when she was around 10 years old, her mother too passed away. And because of this, she was then raised by her aunts. Tiro was described as someone who always saw the good in others and was always willing to help. She was also described as someone who was very petite, so when you were in a room with her, she'd literally just stand out because she was so tiny and small. And when you'd first meet her, you'd think that she was shy, but after a while you could tell that she was just really outgoing and so kind-hearted. Once she matriculated, she was really excited for the future, and she got accepted to study at the University of Johannesburg, or UJ, but things didn't go as planned. But around the same time, she really got interested in makeup, and this is where things started making sense for her. She was really good at it. She loved taking care of herself. She loved taking care of others. You know, she liked nice things, and she was just really focused and knew where she wanted to go, and she was doing what she needed to do to get there. With her family, Tiro was a bit secretive when it came to her love life. When they would ask her if she had a boyfriend or if she was seeing someone, she would just give them like a shy smile, and she really wouldn't answer them. But it did turn out that she was seeing someone. She had a boyfriend, and his name was Ntutuko Ntokozo Shoba. Most people refer to him as Shoba, so for the rest of the video, that's how I will be referring to him as well. Shoba was born around 1989 in Pimville, and not much is known about his childhood, his upbringing, or his family. They kind of distanced themselves from him when everything came to light. At the time of the case, he was 33 years old and working at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, or JSE, in the IT division as an analyst. I'm not exactly sure how Shoba and Tiro met or when they started dating and seeing each other, but they did, and Tiro's family started noticing that Shoba was around a lot more. There was one instance where Tiro was at her uncle's place, and they were walking out of the complex gate, and the uncle saw that Shoba was waiting for Tiro. So he turned to Tiro and he asked, like, "Oh, is this your boyfriend?" And Tiro just gave him like a shy smile. She didn't really answer him. And then he looked at Shoba and he told him, like, "You know, you better look after her, and if you do anything to hurt her, then you'll face the consequences, you know, like all hell will break loose." Kind of like what, like, your brothers, your father, like, you know, your uncle say, like, if you're dating someone or seeing someone and they just like threaten that person, you know, just to make sure that they take care of you, you know. Her family also started noticing that the same car would come around the house, but they wouldn't see Shoba's face. So it's like he would purposely make sure that they would never see him, even when they'd asked Tiro to bring him inside the house so that they could at least meet him and sort of put a name to the car that was constantly outside and hooting for Tiro to come out. And for her aunts and family, they really didn't understand why Tiro didn't want to introduce them to him, or why Shoba didn't even like greet them or want to just introduce themselves, so, you know, like they knew who Tiro was with. And it's not like they didn't expect her to date. Like, she was old enough. Around this time, she was around 25 years old, 26 years old, you know, so she was old enough to date. So they just really didn't understand why they were never allowed to like meet Shoba, or why Shoba didn't want to meet with them. Literally, there'd be a time where he would be in his car outside the yard waiting for Tiro to come out, and if the gate would open and it wasn't her, he'd literally lean back in the car and kind of like hide his face, and they'd see him do this, but he kind of make it look like he's not in the car, even though they knew that he was, you know, like he was just very weird, and they just didn't understand it much, but they really couldn't do much about it, and they just let Tiro live her life. There was one time a friend of Tiro's cousin saw her out, and they had a relationship where she saw Tiro as like a younger sister and she saw her as an older sister. So when they saw each other, they were really excited. They were hugging each other, you know, chatting a bit, and then this friend saw that there was champagne on the table that Tiro was sitting at, you know, and she just wondered to herself, like, I wonder like who bought that. And then she looked around the table and she saw Shoba. She saw Shoba's friends, and she kind of put two and two together, and this is when she figured out that Tiro and Shoba were seeing together. Seeing together, seeing each other. immediately after that, she told Sokho that they had to speak and have a conversation. They didn't necessarily have to have it then and there. You know, she was just saying like, you know what, I actually need to speak to you about something. And Sokho was like, you know what, I actually need to speak to you about something too. And the reason why she wanted to speak to Sokho after she saw that she was with Shoba was because Shoba and his friends were known in the community. They were known to be philanderers. So basically, that's just when men have just a lot of sexual relations with women. So basically, Shoba and his friends were just busy men, whether they were in relationships or not, married, engaged, just dating someone. You know, they were just known to be, they were just known in the streets as people that just loved women. And it was also believed that Shoba was married. So she just didn't want to see her little sister in such a position with Shoba and just, you know, she just didn't want that for her sister. There was one day where Sokho told her aunt that she was going out and then Uber was coming to pick her up. And her aunt just had a really bad feeling about it. She couldn't pinpoint what the feeling was or like why she felt that way. You know, like you could call it intuition or whatever, but she just felt really bad. She just had like this bad feeling about it. So she told Sokho that like, you know, she'd walk her out of the gate. And then as soon as they walked out the gate, she saw this white city Golf waiting for, like waiting to pick up Sokho. And as soon as she saw this car, immediately she was like, nope, this is not an Uber. And she wanted to greet the driver, so like the Uber driver. And this was because of this bad feeling that she has. So she just wanted to greet this Uber driver, see his face, you know, and want him to see her as well, in case anything happened to Sokho. Like in case they said the next day that maybe Sokho went missing, she just wanted to have the right information to give police. So she went to the driver, tried to greet, and you know, she was like, hi, how are you? And the driver just looked straight ahead, didn't look at her, didn't say anything, just like waved and then took off. Nothing ever happened. Sokho came back home safe, but it's just something that stood out to her and something that she remembers when she thinks back to when this case happened. It is believed that within the first 3 months, Sokho knew that she was pregnant. And once people found out that she was pregnant, they were a bit shocked because they knew that Shoba was probably the father of their unborn baby. And they just didn't want Sokho to be known as someone who had a baby with a married guy. But despite all of this, Sokho was really excited and happy. And her family were really supportive as well. They did everything to help Sokho prepare for the baby that was coming. You know, they made plans for this baby, and Sokho then found out that she was going to have a girl, so she decided to name the baby Kamano. Shoba said that he wanted to name the baby Ntombikayise, which means daddy's girl, but Kamano was the name that stuck. And Sokho was really hands-on with everything that had to do with her baby, and she would tell her family everything that they had to buy, the kinds of clothes that they needed to get. And when they would speak about Sokho and the baby, they would literally speak about the baby as though the baby was already there and not like the baby was still in Soho's tummy. So they would be like, you know what, we need to get 1, 2, 3 for Kamano, we need to do this for Kamano, we need to do this. And the whole family loved baby Kamano so much, and they were just so excited for this new addition in their family, and they were just really looking forward to it, as was Sokho. It was just a really exciting time for them. However, everything would change in June 2020. On Thursday, the 4th of June, Sokho was about 8 months pregnant, and she had just seen her doctor, I think a couple of weeks before, and her doctor told her that she had to start eating more green leafy vegetables for baby Kamano. So on this day, she cooked dinner for her family, and then at around 4 p.m., she told them that she was leaving because she was going to go see Shoba. She left the house and she was wearing blue leggings, white sneakers, a black cap, and a gray t-shirt. And as she was walking out, one of her aunts was walking in. Her aunt asked her where she was going, and she said that she was going to Shoba's house because he said that they needed to discuss baby clothes. So her aunt was a bit confused because she was like, why do you guys need to discuss baby clothes? Like, you know, you don't need to have a discussion about baby clothes. And then Sokho said, no, we're going to discuss baby clothes, and then we're going to go to the shops and go buy those things that we talked about. But still, her aunt was like, she just didn't understand why they had to do that, because for her, she thought, you know what, it's 4 p.m. So why are you guys going to go discuss clothes and get baby clothes so late? It was June, so we were 3 months into lockdown, and it was like heavy lockdown, you know, like curfew, shops were closed, restaurants weren't open, they weren't selling alcohol, they weren't selling cigarettes. So her aunt still didn't understand it, because she was like, where are you going? Because, you know, we're in lockdown. But, you know, she just left it, and then she saw Tsoho get into an Uber, and before Tsoho did that, she told her aunt that she'd be back latest 10 p.m. that night. She then got into an Uber that took her to Shova's place in Florida, about 16 kilometers west of Johannesburg. Because Tsoho said that she was going to be coming back home that night by 10 p.m. latest, her family left the gate unlocked as well as the front door unlocked, so that when she came in, she, like, you know, she could just come in, wouldn't disturb them. And then that was that. But that night she didn't return home, and the next morning when they woke up, Tsoho still wasn't there. They tried calling her, but Tsoho's phone just rang and there was no answer, and this continued for the whole of Friday, Saturday and Sunday. So they would try and call Tsoho, and sometimes her phone would be on and it would just ring with no answer. Other times when they would try and call it, her phone would be off. So it just continued like that throughout the whole weekend. So because this was happening, they just thought that wherever she was with Shoba, because that's where she said she was going, and that she'd go home when she was ready. And they knew that it's not like she could stay at Shoba's place forever, because at this point she was 8 months pregnant, you know, and the baby could come anytime now. And when she was going to have the baby, she wasn't going to stay with Shoba, she was going to stay in her family home. So they knew that whatever happens, she has to come home at some point, because she was going to have this baby, you know. Then on Sunday, 3 days after Tsoho was last seen by her family, some of her friends went to her family home and they told them that they had to go straight to the police station to open a missing persons report for Tsoho, because something had happened, and that, and they just said like something wasn't right, so they had to go to the police station and do this. So on the 7th of June 2020, a missing persons report was opened for Tsoho Fatopule 3 days after she was last seen. When they reported her missing, police told the family that a dead body had been found, and they told the family that they should look at some pictures to confirm if it was Tsoho. Some of them couldn't look at the pictures, but the ones that managed to look at the pictures confirmed that the body police had found did belong to Tsoho Fatopule. It turned out that on the 5th of June, so the day after Tsoho was last seen, a body had been found in Durban Deep Roodepoort, which is a township in Johannesburg. So the people who had found the body sent a message in a WhatsApp group chat that they had for the community, saying that a body had been found in the outskirts of the community. So one man in the group, his name is Tepo Budibe, he saw the message and he decided to go check for himself. He too is from Durban Deep and he was an active community member. So once he got there, he found a pregnant woman hanging on the tree. And at first it looked like she had taken her own life, but then the way her body had been positioned also made them question it a bit. So from far, as you were walking towards the tree where this pregnant woman was hanging, it seemed as though she was almost in like a praying position, but then you could still see the rope that she was hanging from. She was also bleeding from the chest, and when they looked closer, they realized that she had been shot in the chest. They then called police officers, but they also tried to identify who this pregnant woman was, so they took pictures of her face. But other people who had found her hanging in like the outskirts of this community had also taken videos that ended up on social media. So because some people had seen the face of this woman, they were like, no man, that's Tsoho Tsohofatso from Midlands Zone 3, and that kind of went around the community, like, oh, do you know Tsoho from Midlands Zone 3? And it just went like that, like that, like that. And then this is how they discovered that it was Tsoho Fatopule, and they managed to contact her paternal family to let them know what they had found. It's a bit sad because her family members also saw pictures and videos of Tsoho on social media, and it was extremely traumatizing, to say the least. 4 days after Tsoho was found, she was laid to rest on the 11th of June 2020, and pink and white balloons were released in memory of her. Her funeral was live streamed on multiple news networks, and some political leaders attended her funeral too, because it had made huge headlines. Shoba did not attend the funeral. An investigation into Tsogo's murder began, and on Wednesday the 17th of June, almost 2 weeks after Tsogo had been found, police arrested their first suspect. They located him during the weekend when he was in Mpumalanga, and when they arrested him, he was on his way back to Johannesburg. They cornered him in Hillbrow, but he tried to escape, but they managed to arrest him. And once they looked through the car, they found that it was just full of stuff. It was full of clothes, it was full of food, and they could tell that he had been evading arrest and living in his car since news broke about Tsogo's murder. Police managed to track down the suspect when Shoba went to the police station after he heard that Tsogo's family was going there to report her missing. So he got to the police station and he basically just told the police that he last saw Tsogo on the 4th of June, and it was around 10 p.m. when she got into an Uber. He told them that there were CCTV cameras around his complex, so they should go back to his complex with him so that they could look at the CCTV footage before, like, it disappeared or it was deleted. So police officers got the CCTV footage. They saw Tsogo getting into a silver gray Jeep, which they believed was an Uber, and then they saw the number plates. And then after this, they kind of were looking at the cameras trying to see if they could see this car again, and they saw the same car on Albertina Sisulu Road parallel to Main Reef Road, and then they traced the number plates, and that is how they found their suspect. His name was Muzikayise Malepane, and at the time of his arrest, he was 31 years old. During his questioning, Muzikayise said that he had nothing to do with Tsogo's murder and he didn't know what they were talking about, but then the investigating officer told him that he knew what he had done and that he knew that he was lying, so he just told him to just tell him the truth. And this is when Muzikayise confessed to killing Tsogo Fatsopule. He said that he had been contracted by a friend whose nickname was Pikachu, and it turned out that Pikachu was in fact Ntuthuko Shoba. Shoba and Muzikayise apparently knew each other from high school in 2008-2009, and in their early adulthood they would just go out partying. They weren't necessarily like the best of friends, but they knew each other. Muzikayise says that a few months before Tsogo was killed, he was at his girlfriend's house when he received a phone call from Shoba. He wasn't sure how Shoba had gotten his numbers, but then when he spoke to Shoba on the phone, Shoba just said that he needed Muzikayise to do something for him and that they should meet. So Muzikayise decided to send his location, and literally after that, Shoba made his way to Muzikayise's girlfriend's house. Once he got there, he told Muzikayise that he needed him to kill a pregnant woman for 7,000 rand. Then after this, he said that the pregnant woman was his girlfriend, and you know, he just wasn't ready to have a baby, so he just needed Muzikayise to kill Tsogo for him. Muzikayise said that 7,000 rand was too little, and then the second offer that Shoba made was 20,000 rand, but again Muzikayise said that that wasn't enough money, and then they settled on an amount which was 70,000 rand. And the plan was that Shoba wanted Tsogo to be hanged from the bridge in Maritzburg, and after this he was going to take Tsogo's phone and write a suicidal message on her WhatsApp status so that it would look like she had taken her own life. And with all of this information, police then started looking into Shoba, but he still wasn't officially a suspect. Then on the 29th of June 2020, police interviewed Shoba and they asked him to hand over his phone, which he did willingly, and they didn't find any communication between him and Tsogo. According to Muzikayise, this is what happened on the 4th of June 2020. He was at his girlfriend's home in Roodepoort and he was drinking with friends because he was trying to gather the courage to do what he was about to do. So he was just waiting for Shoba to call him, and then Shoba called him and told him that it was time. So then he drove to Shoba's house, and this was between 8:30 to 9 in the evening. And he says as he was on his way to Shoba's complex, they kept trying to call each other, but there were like network issues, so they couldn't really get a hold of each other. But then once he got to the complex, he finally got a hold of Shoba, and Shoba told him that he should wait outside the gate of the complex. At this point, Muzikayise was driving a silver Jeep which belonged to his girlfriend, and he and Shoba had already planned this prior, and the reason why was because they wanted Tsogo to think that she was getting into an Uber. So if Ms. Kayisi arrived in like a Jeep, it would also seem like it would seem like it was an Uber and nothing else. As we see on the CCTV footage, Ms. Kayisi picked up Tsogo, she got into the car, and then they made their way. As they were driving, Ms. Kayisi was heading towards Noordgezicht instead of Middellands, where Tsogo stayed, and she was really surprised, and she asked him where he was taking her, and he just said that he had something to drop off quickly and then they would make their way to Middellands. Then they drove all the way to Noordgezicht, and then Ms. Kayisi stopped the car in an open field. He got out the car and he had a gun in his hand. He then went to the other side, opened the door, and tried to take Tsogo out. And Tsogo was fighting for her life. She was trying to stay in the car, but he managed to get her out. And then he shot her in the chest. After this, he picked her up and put her in the back seat of the car. And then he drove towards Durban Deep Roodepoort. And then there he drove to another open field and he saw a tree. And then he continued with the plan that he and Shoba had, which was to hang Tsogo. After he did this, he received a call from Shoba, and Shoba asked if the job was done, and Ms. Kayisi said that it was. And then Shoba asked about Tsogo's cell phone because they had to post on her WhatsApp status. But then Ms. Kayisi said that he couldn't find her phone and he didn't know where it had fallen. Like, he didn't know if it was in Noordgezicht in the open field where he had shot her, or if it had fallen out when he was trying to hang her and was somewhere there in the bushes. Like, he didn't know. And Shoba was just so anxious about it. He kept asking over and over again, like, where's the phone? Where's the phone? But Ms. Kayisi didn't know where the phone was. And then that was that. And a couple of days later, they met at a cash build or a builder's warehouse. Different sources say different things, but it's between the two. And once they met up, Shoba told Ms. Kayisi that he didn't have the money yet, but he was going to gather it for him. And this was the last time the two of them saw each other or spoke before Ms. Kayisi was arrested on the 17th of June. What Ms. Kayisi said made sense to Tsogo's family, because they said in the weeks before her murder, strange things were happening. So the first thing was that Tsogo would receive threatening messages, but she didn't know from who. And the second thing was that she had received, I'm not sure if it was a phone call or a text message, but she had received this and it said that she had a job interview. And this person said that they would pick up Tsogo from a McDonald's and then drive her to where the interview was. And she was really excited about this because at the time she was unemployed and she was looking for work. But then her friends told her that it was a bit suspicious and they were like, listen, it's during lockdown, no one is hiring, number one. McDonald's is closed, so why are you guys going to meet there? Restaurants are closed. Where are you guys meeting? Also, they said that she was pregnant and no one would want to hire a pregnant woman because she was close to giving birth and they can't hire someone and then just give her maternity leave. So they just told her, like, you know what, that sounds very suspicious. And it turned out, according to Ms. Kayise, that was the plan. So the first plan they had was that he was going to pick up Tsogo, like an Uber driver, and then leave her in a river so that people in the community would find her. And then that didn't work out. Then the second thing was that he was going to pick her up at a McDonald's and then hang her from the Maritzburg Bridge. I don't know why Shoba wanted it to be like so shocking. Like, he just wanted a shock value. Like, everything that he wanted, like in a river where people find her, or on a bridge on the highway where everyone sees her. Like, he just wanted the shock value. Don't understand it. So basically, Ms. Kayisi and Shoba had tried to kill Tsogo at least on two other occasions, and both times they were unsuccessful. So this plan had been in motion for a couple of weeks. Then finally, in February 2021, 8 months after Tsogo Fatopule was found, news broke that Ms. Kayisi Malepane pleaded guilty to all 4 charges against him, and that he had entered into a plea agreement and sentence agreement with the state. He also wrote a letter to Tsogo's family apologizing for what he had done and asking for forgiveness, and they did say that they do forgive him, but that he should just face the consequences. So let me quickly read you his letter. I'll also put it on the screen for you guys to read along with me. So the letter says, "To whom it may concern, I'm writing this letter to share with you what has been on my mind and heart. I stayed awake writing this letter to my head, and each time I found myself balling up the pages. I couldn't find the right words to convey how deeply remorseful I am for killing Tsogofa Zobule. Sometimes saying I'm sorry for robbing her of her life and family seems to be a small gesture. Every time I thought back to that fateful night, I find myself asking a question. Why didn't I just drive away or call for any help or even go to the police? I have let down a lot of people and I will do everything in my power to learn from this regrettable doing and face the outcome of what transpired on that night. I would like to extend my sincere apologies once again and will continue forward in doing what is right. Thank you. Yours sincerely." Muskaise was sentenced to 20 years imprisonment for murder and 5 years for obstructing justice, possession of an unlicensed firearm, and possession of ammunition. He also agreed to testify against the mastermind, and it came as no surprise to Tsogo's family that the mastermind behind her murder was Ntuthuko Shoba. Right after Muskaise entered into a plea agreement with the state, Shoba was arrested in February 2021 for the murder of Tsogofa Zobule. When police went to go arrest Shoba, they showed up at his house with a warrant, and then he asked police if he could go upstairs to quickly change out of his pajamas into normal clothes. They said that he could, so they followed him upstairs and he changed, and once they got there, they saw a phone like on the bedside table, and when they looked at the phone, they realized that this wasn't the same phone that they had went through when he was interviewed a couple of months earlier in June. So they looked at this phone, and this is when they discovered that Shoba actually had two phones. And once they went through this phone, they found communication between him and Tsoho, but also between him and Muskaise. The phone that police went through in June was registered to Shoba, but the second phone was a burner phone. They also discovered that on the day of Tsoho's murder, Muskaise and Shoba had been in contact 23 times. Shoba had called him 23 times. Shoba, however, has an explanation as to why he had been in contact with Muskaise. So he says that during lockdown, he had met a man who is only known as Swagger, and Swagger had introduced him to Muskaise. So he said that he bumped into Muskaise during lockdown at a traffic light and they exchanged greetings. Then he asked him how he was surviving during lockdown, because this was when alcohol was banned, cigarettes were banned, and he was like, you know what, people really need these things. Then the light went green, and then Shoba was like to Muskaise, oh no, don't worry, I'll get your number from Swagger. So basically what Shoba was saying was that the only reason why he had been in contact with Muskaise was because it was during lockdown and he had wanted cigarettes, and he heard that Muskaise was selling them illegally, you know, because it was illegal for you to sell them. So that's the only reason why they had been in contact with one another. Witnesses did say that Muskaise did sell alcohol during lockdown, but he did not sell cigarettes. So yeah. Then Shoba says that on the 4th of June 2020, so the last day that he saw Tsoko alive, she had come over because they were discussing what items to get for the baby. And then afterwards, she said that it was late and it was time for her to leave. Shoba said that he tried to order her an Uber, but then Tsoko said, no, someone is on their way to pick me up. And then he says that he walked her out, and then as you saw in the CCTV footage, like, Tsoko went to like the window to go talk to the Uber driver, and he was like, no, it seemed like they really knew each other, and you know, like, not like it was a stranger. And then he says that later he called to check why she didn't indicate that she had arrived home safely, and apparently this was unsuccessful until he was alerted a couple of days later that she was missing. Then this is when he went to offer his statement to the police and told them about the CCTV footage in his complex. Shoba also agreed that he bumped into Muskaise at Builders Warehouse or Cash Builders But he says this was unplanned, and it's not because they were going to discuss payment of any sort. He says that they just bumped into each other and they just greeted each other, but they didn't have any conversation or anything like that. Muskayise claims that the reason why Shoba wanted to have Tsoho killed was because he had a fiance that he didn't want to lose. And he also told Muskayise that they had, like, the two of them, him and his fiance, had an 8 million rand payout from a trust fund that he couldn't lose out on. You can find the name of Shoba's fiance or ex-fiance online. They were engaged, like, with a ring, but they weren't engaged traditionally. Like, he didn't lobola her. So I'll call up with her first name, but I just won't mention her surname. And her first name is Rosette. During the trial, Shoba did tell the court that he did try and conceal the pregnancy from Rosette, and when he was asked why, he said it was because he had been procrastinating around the issue because he didn't want to stress Rosette because she had recently lost her mother to cancer. So she was already dealing with losing her mother, and he didn't want to come like with more news that was going to stress her, and didn't want to tell her that he had impregnated another woman. There was, however, evidence that Rosette had known about Tsoho's pregnancy, and there were messages found that she had sent to Tsoho telling Tsoho to leave her man alone. Shoba then told the court that Rosette only found out about Tsoho's pregnancy when news broke out on the 8th of June of her murder. Shoba also denied any knowledge about an 8 million rand payout that Muskayise had spoken about. When he spoke about his relationship with Tsoho, he basically said that they didn't have one. He said, and I quote, "Tsoho and I were never in a formally committed relationship. I would say I was in a serious relationship with Rosette, and we would bump into each other, hang out, and eventually decide to spend the night together. It was never a very serious relationship. But they were on and off for 3 years. They were literally on and off for 3 years, but it wasn't a serious relationship." Hi. During the trial, they also brought up the fact that Tsoho and Shoba would have arguments over the phone, and when he was asked about his fights with Tsoho, he said that their relationship was frequently volatile because Tsoho wanted him to be emotionally available. And he said that, like, sometimes she would want him to come over and want them to, like, go out and see each other, but he really didn't want to do that, so she was upset about that. And some of this is true because there were messages between the two where Tsoho did complain about her frustration caused by his ill treatment and failure to support her emotionally and financially, and this was partly because she was unemployed at the time of her murder. Shoba also told the court that he found out about Tsoho's pregnancy towards the end of January 2020 after her first trimester, but he did say that he was really happy and excited about becoming a father, and he said that he would have never killed Tsoho or his unborn child. During the trial, he said a couple of things, but I'm going to read you three quotes. The first one is that he said, "I could never imagine hiring someone I know to take a hit on the mother of my child. The second thing, I do not have a child of my own, and to think that I can kill an innocent soul that is my own flesh and blood is nonsense at best." And the third thing is that he said, "I could not have financially assisted the deceased through her pregnancy while in the meantime plotting to kill her." But messages between the two of them said otherwise. Shoba had told the court that this was Tsoho's second pregnancy, and that in 2019, so the year before, she had fallen pregnant, but both of them had mutually agreed for her to terminate. But messages between the two of them showed that he wanted her to have another termination, and in messages that Tsoho had sent to her, she said that Shoba had forced her to get a termination. She also warned Shoba that she was not going to have another termination and pleaded with him for support. And it was discovered that when Tsoho was 7 months pregnant, she had been given pills by Shoba, and after this she experienced excruciating abdominal pain. And it turned out that Shoba was trying to induce a termination. Like, he was just trying to get rid of this baby. So he wasn't happy about this pregnancy. And there are so many instances where you could see where he just tried to convince her to terminate the pregnancy, and he tried to terminate the pregnancy himself. In the end, it came as no surprise when Ntuthuko Goshoba was found guilty of being the mastermind behind Tshegofatso Pule's murder, as well as that of their unborn child. Then on the 29th of July 2020, so just last year, he was sentenced to life imprisonment. Then a couple of months after that, in November, news broke that Shoba was trying to appeal his sentence. But luckily, his appeal was denied. Tshegofatso Pule was only 28 years old at the time of her murder, and she was really excited to start the new chapter of her life with her baby girl, Kamano, but unfortunately, it was tragically taken away from her. In 2021, the Tshegofatso Pule Foundation was established to assist victims of gender-based violence.